To what extent is holy a user-friendly word, either to describe God or our fellow human beings? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on glimpses of our God, and today our theme is the holiness of God. My conversation partners are again two members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, Stravko Stefanovic and Paul Dibdol. Let me go to that question. I'm thinking here about what happens when we hear the word holy. Is that a good word, a bad word? What kind of a feel do you get when somebody says holy, even with reference to God or with reference to human beings?
I think when applied to human beings, I think we usually do it not in a kind way. It's usually in a sarcastic way. Well, boy, isn't he holy or isn't she holy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that holy carries an entirely positive connotation, generally speaking.
See, the biblical story that comes to mind on that score is the story of the Samaritan who came to the aid of the man on the Jericho road. You know, the priest and the Levite wrapped their robes around them and didn't want to be contaminated. That's kind of the mental picture I have of holy.
Yeah.
It's don't get your hands dirty with what's going
on. Kind of removed from the real business of living.
Yeah.
Even when we talk about God, the word is difficult to define, and it begs a lot of explanation and examples and illustrations what it means to be holy.
Yeah.
Isn't it, at least in the Old Testament, doesn't the word holy mean essentially set aside somehow for a specific purpose, or is that too simplistic of a definition?
Yes, and like the book of Leviticus is completely dedicated to that characteristic of God.
Yeah. And you see, even that most violent of Old Testament customs, chayrem, dedicated to destruction or dedicated for some holy purpose. It's a very problematic concept.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to back off just a moment here, and I'd like to read a comment from, it's not a Christian comment, but I'd like for us to tussle just a bit in the lesson this time about these balancing concepts, one side or the other. Now, this is Richard Livingston, a British classicist who died in 1960. And this is a quote from the Atlantic Monthly. He says, "Any attempt to train character is dangerous and must be undertaken with full perception of its danger. Many notes must be harmonized if the full music of the human instrument is to sound. Gentleness and courage, boldness and prudence, inquisitiveness and reverence, tolerance and firmness, confidence and humility, stability and freedom. It is a difficult and risky attempt to make a man, and it is tempting to turn aside from the task. But we have only to look round us to see the disastrous results of declining it, as for the most part we have hitherto done."
Mm.
Now, the one that I'd like to pick out for us to explore here is inquisitiveness and reverence. See, holiness implies that you stay away.
Kind of an other, an otherness about God.
Mm-hmm. But, and what I'd like to do, I thought a bit here, there are stories in the Bible that if you get too close to God, the holy object, it's all over.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the best known stories that I think of there are Uzzah and the Ark,
mm-hmm.
and the two she-bears that mauled the 42 boys because they were not polite to the prophetic figure. So those are ones where, boy, if you get too close, it's all over, or close to being all over. And those stories in my early childhood really made my prayers very polite. I wasn't going to get too frisky with God. See?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it took some really experiences. My first funeral was for a little 7-year-old girl, a 6-year-old girl who died of an epileptic fit. And at that point, my prayers were far too polite because I was haunted by this picture of God's holiness, to be very careful. Then there's a whole other collection of stories of experiences that should have been fatal, but were not. For instance, when Jacob wrestles with the angel, he says, "I've seen the face of God, and my life is still preserved." See?
Mm-hmm.
So you get this tension there. Mm-hmm. So let's explore that a little bit. The exploratory coming close to God, asking, exploring, versus staying away because you might get hurt if you do that? Can we add any more to that?
I believe that the whole discussion in the Old Testament is placed within the concept of God's covenant with his people. So holiness is not discussed in isolation of the relationship between God and his people. And as you have pointed out, some people in the Old Testament were very keen on getting closer to God. And we have some examples where someone like Moses asks God to see him in a closer way, to have a closer look of him and maybe of his face too, and so on. So it's relational. Holiness is relational, and it comes, I believe, in that context of that relationship between the two. Moreover, in the Old Testament, it extended to the type of relationship between God's people and the rest of the nations. Israel, as God's holy people, whom God made holy by setting them apart, were not to conform to the standards of the nations around, but to listen to God and follow his instructions. So I find that although it's not at first very obvious, holiness turns out to be very relational.
Yeah. Let me just read one story here which surprised me when it first soaked in. Exodus 24, verses 9 to 11. This was after the Ten Commandments were given. Then Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up, and they saw the God of Israel. Under his feet there was something like a pavement of sapphire stone, like the very heaven for clearness. He did not lay his hand on the chief men of the people of Israel. They beheld God, they ate and drank. They know the rules. This shouldn't have happened. But wow, we did. See, and you'll find a number of the stories like that. And we tend to remember the one where God says, you can't see me, I'll put my hand over you. But here you have this amazing story where...
By the way, this passage was extremely difficult for ancient people to translate, especially the Targumists who translated the Hebrew Bible into the Aramaic language for the community that came back from exile. And it was very, very difficult. So there is a saying, you know, like the rabbis who tried to control the Targumists in their translation, they said, you know, if you say that these men saw God, that's a blasphemy. If the Targumist changes that and says that they saw like the appearance of God, it's a lie. So it was not easy for the translator to choose between these two. Therefore, I agree with you. The text is almost offensive.
Yeah.
And I do not know if there are parallels in other sources, including the Quran, where one would find an instance where so many people were able to see God's face and party. You know, and have, I mean, rejoice at that thought and so on. Definitely, it's an unusual text in the Bible.
Well, the amazing thing is, we've mentioned Jacob, you know, Peniel, you know, he puts God into a hammerlock and says, I will not let you go unless you bless me. It is an astonishing story. And he says, I've seen the face of God and I'm still alive. Hagar, she had a similar experience, you see. And then Israel in Deuteronomy 5, verse 22 to 33. It's again a fascinating passage. And it shows the ambivalence of the people themselves when they realize that they have heard something or seen something that they weren't supposed to see, and now they don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
because in Deuteronomy 5, there's a whole section here where they had seen God and out of the darkness and so on. And then they come in beginning of verse 24. Look, the Lord our God, and they're speaking to Moses now, has shown us his glory and greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the fire. Today we have seen that God may speak to someone and the person may still live. So now why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any longer, we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the fire as we have and remained alive? Go near, you yourself, and hear all that the Lord our God will say. then tell us everything that the Lord our God tells you, and we will listen and do it. Now, that's very curious because they've already seen him, already heard him, and survived. And they said, but who can do this? So, Moses, you go up there.
Yeah.
And so this incredible ambivalence that we find there is certainly reflected in the Old Testament.
And it's interesting the impact that that made on Moses' face.
Right.
So it's impossible to be in such a close presence with God and not to reflect some of the glory
that
comes from the Creator.
Not to be changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, let's make a transition to the New Testament because I think this is fairly crucial. Isn't there a change in how we deal with holiness when you come to the story of Jesus? We declare to you what's from the beginning, what we've heard, what we've seen with our eyes, what we've looked at, touched with our hands, 1 John 1:1-4. Isn't that a radical difference between what you find in the Old Testament?
It's kind of interesting to me with the incarnation. You have the angel Gabriel appearing, and people are afraid of Gabriel. But then when you have God incarnate as a little baby, people don't seem to be so afraid any longer. Mm. And that seems to be the sort of pattern through Jesus' ministry is that he certainly was intimidating in a certain sense, and yet outcasts, women, people that were not of high estate were drawn to him and did not seem to be afraid to be in his presence.
Now, I would like to make a connection with the Old Testament. There is a misunderstanding in the Old Testament that people were supposed to make themselves holy. And yet, time and again, the text of the Bible says, quotes God as saying, be holy because I am the Lord your God who makes you holy. When we go into the Gospels, I see people noticing something on Christ's face that attracted them to Jesus. And yet, at the same time, almost nobody came to Jesus with a willingness to change without being affected or changed somehow by him. So on the one hand, he was so close to the people. On the other hand, he exercised an influence on them as well.
And you do have that experience when Peter says, depart from me, for I'm a sinful man.
Correct.
Well, and the disciples that are afraid to ask him any more questions, you know, there was a...
Yeah.
It wasn't just buddy-buddy with Jesus.
And I think that even today in our experience, when we come in contact with true goodness, there is almost a sense of awe. Mm-hmm. Wow.
There ought to be, I think.
Yeah.
There naturally is, you see.
Mm-hmm. And I think of one famous Old Testament passage. Again, you know, it's God who makes us holy. Isaiah, I'm an unclean man. So a coal comes and... touches his lips.
God takes the initiative.
He takes initiative.
Bridge that.
And cleanses it. And it just has a remarkable effect. Well, our time is up. Next week, we're going to talk about God, the lawgiver. And my conversation partners will be the same men again, Strothfield and Paul. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.